Did you know the age at which the brain's capacity to learn peaks? At the age of 3. A brain synapse is the connection between two brain cells that form as we learn new things. Scientists have learned that a toddler's brain develops over 100 trillion synapses. The more synapses formed, the more you learn. Recognizing shapes, drawing, singing, and manipulating toys are all examples of behaviors your child learns in the first few years of life. Stay with us as we explore how you can maximize your child's potential for a life of success. It all starts now on Go Healthy for Good. Welcome to Go Healthy for Good. I'm Dr. Nerida and I'm glad you've joined me today. Go Healthy for Good is live every Monday to Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at Go Healthy Live. Oh, and our website, hopetv.org/gohealthy. Every child learns habits and behavior patterns that are not easily changed in later years. Parents and educators have the most important work. That work done well will set children up to achieving great success. We're going to explore early childhood learning here in our show today, but first, let me share with you a short video from Rowan University's Professor Karen Hutchinson on the importance of play in young children.
Definitely misunderstood in today's society. Parents fail to understand that play addresses all domains of a child rather than just the cognitive domain. Parents today are so focused on getting their children into Harvard or being successful monetarily and educationally that they have forgotten the physical domain, which of course has led to obesity, and the social-emotional domain that has led to bullying. Play is actually the work of a child in which they are preparing themselves for adult roles and for society at large. Toys are actually tools for the future, and children play with toys in an unstructured manner in order to create and actively engage in their physical environment to build knowledge. In the country, over 60% of schools do not have play and or don't have a playground. The United Nations Article 31, Rights of a Child, state very clearly that a child has the right to play. That has been forgotten, and the United States is one of two countries that has not ratified that document. Somalia is the other one. Parents playing with children does not have to be structured. The more unstructured, the more beneficial it is. Let's take, for example, a mother who comes home after a hairy day at the office, and she's emptying the dishwasher. She could play I Spy. I spy something around. I spy something that begins with a D. This is play. It's educational. My early childhood students have learned that because play is missing in the curriculum, they need to advocate, be the voice for children.
Joining me today is Dr. Carol Hammond, who has taught elementary school but is currently Washington Adventist University psychology professor, and also Dr. Davinia Lee, a doctor in early childhood special education. Welcome, doctors.
Thank you.
We've got a really important subject to discuss today, and what psychosocial changes do little people go through as they go from birth to sort of school age? Carol, what happens to their perception of the world and their understanding of who they are, who other people are?
Yes. Well, at first, it's all about self. So as they progress along, they have to understand who they really are and what they want to know, what is my place in the context of their community as well, in my family, where do I belong, kind of a thing. They have to learn what is good and bad in terms of behavior. They learn how to handle their feelings in socially acceptable ways. So there are quite a few changes that they have to kind of go through during this time.
Thank you. Now, Davinia, we saw some interesting outcomes from children that had been brought up, I guess brought up would be a loose term, in, for example, Russian or Romanian orphanages, where they were fed, they were clothed, but some of their other needs were not met. Walk us through that. Tell us about that and what the outcomes were for them behaviorally.
Yes, and findings for those children, many times they weren't able to form attachments. Those children had difficulty communicating their wants and needs. A lot of behavioral challenges.
So they were fed and clothed, but they were not... were they deprived of?
They were deprived of making an attachment with a primary caregiver, you know, someone who loved them and cared for them. They were deprived of developing social skills, so, you know, how to interact in certain environments and settings.
They were kept to themselves. They didn't receive touch or love or...
Yes, nurturing and care. And as a result... And when a lot of times when they're adopted or are brought into a family, they just experience so many challenges because they were deprived of those important food and shelter and being clothed. Those are important, but it's equally important that they're nurtured and cared for and touched and held and can communicate with someone. And so they do experience challenges.
Right. Carol, it's said that parents are a child's first and best teacher. How is that?
Absolutely. That is absolutely very important. Thinking of the Adventist home, parents can actually prepare their children for preschool and for schooling in general. And children, if they don't get that, many of the behavior problems that they have come because they don't get that parenting at home.
Now, does it just come naturally? Babies are not born with an instruction manual, are they?
Absolutely not.
So parents have to, it doesn't just come naturally. Parents have to make effort to teach.
Absolutely.
Is that right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And many of us, we make mistakes. We're not going to be perfect. I don't think there are any perfect parents. But we all learn by, you know, associating with our children, by nurturing them and all these kinds of things. We learn how to really deal with our children, yes. Mm. So, parenting is extremely important in the beginning. Yeah.
And it's good to probably connect with other parents who've done it before you.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
Your parents, of course, who can tell you some tips of how to suddenly become a teacher overnight.
Absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. It is, yes.
Yes. Davinia, when I think we can probably all remember our first day at school when our mums dropped us off at whether it was preschool or school and that awful trauma of being left alone. How might parents work towards that? And you know, because some parents do need to use childcare facilities because they both need to work to earn enough to keep the household going. So it can happen at younger and younger ages. So how can parents do that well and transition their children nicely?
Yes, I think if that separation or that transition is intentionally planned for, parents as well as the caregiver or teacher can help that child transition in a less traumatic way. So doing things like instead of the child's first introduction to that setting being that first day of school, go before to allow the child to tour or visit, allow the child to meet the teacher, maybe meeting some parents beforehand so that the children could form a play dates over the summer so that, you know, everyone would love to have a friend on their first day so that there's someone familiar. Recognizing that the child's feelings and fears are valid and identifying those feelings for that child. And then also carrying through on your promises. So if you say, I'm going to pick you up at 3 o'clock, be there at 3 o'clock so that the child learns to understand that, yes, you leave, but you come back as well. And then being involved as much as you can in any way that you can so that you can be a part of that experience for the child.
Great. Mm-hmm. Carol, define for us, what's early childhood? What age group does it, obviously it would start at birth, but what ages does a child sort of leave the early childhood years and become a child?
Yes, according to what I understand from my developmental psych experience is that it usually begins at 3. From 3 to 6 is considered the early childhood developmental period, yes.
All right. Well, thank you, ladies. Today we're discussing early childhood education. Our guests have shared some really valuable information. When we come back, Justin and I will be making a recipe that you don't want to miss, so don't move and we'll be right back.
I know I'm looking for something, but what? Peace? Purpose? Meaning? I'm still not sure. But I know it's going to take faith.
What deliciousness do you have for us today?
Well, the deliciousness for today is a little something I like to call the un-sausage.
An un-sausage?
The un-sausage.
So it's a sausage you're having when you're not actually having sausages.
Yes. I like to think that we put the fun in the un-sausage. I don't know.
Sounds great. Yeah. So what do we do?
So let's got our stove thingy on here. What we're going to do is put all these various delicious flavorings in some boiling water.
Yep.
And then we're going to put some oats into that.
While you read the ingredients, I'm going to put this on before it gets too hot.
Fantastic. So, un-sausages. 1 cup of water, 2 tablespoons of Bragg's liquid aminos, 1 cup of quick oats, 1 tablespoon of oil, 1 teaspoon of onion powder, 1 teaspoon of honey, 1/2 teaspoon of sage, 1 tablespoon of yeast flakes, 1/2 teaspoon of garlic powder, 1/2 teaspoon of Italian seasoning.
Yum, now that's quite a concoction.
Yes.
I'm curious to taste this.
Each of those things is delicious in its own right, but when mixed together.
Yes.
Mm. Okay, so we've got some garlic powder here. I'll just grab this garlic powder. And
you would start with garlic, wouldn't you?
I mean,
you just have to.
As soon as possible, you want to get that garlic into your system.
And your garlic fix. Oh, and
next,
right behind
obviously,
it.
Obviously, the onion powder.
Onion powder.
Yes. We've got some sage here. Oh, put that in.
Sage is good.
Oh, it is.
Do you ever grow it?
I've never grown it,
but
I have eaten it.
No.
Yes, it's true. You can smell it already.
Yes, you can. It's smelling very good.
Now, some Italian seasoning in there, which is just a delicious concoction of several yummy things.
Right.
Yeah. A little bit of oil. Just a little bit of oil we'll put in there.
Ah, oh, that must make it go smooth.
Yes. And then here we've actually mixed our Bragg's liquid aminos and our honey together. You don't have to do that, but it all ends up in the same place.
Well, it does in here, right?
In my belly. We'll put that right in there. Actually, that honey is sticking.
Oh, it's we've probably got too much anyway.
Well, okay, honey, get in there. Get in there, honey. Okay, one more thing. We've got our yeast flakes. Nutritional yeast flakes, if I'm not mistaken.
So all the tasty things.
All the tasty things go
in. And now our B vitamins.
Yes, B vitamins.
Which don't denature in the heat, actually.
Really?
Yeah, really.
So you can boil them.
You can.
Bake them, put them in a stew.
That's why they've been inserted into cereals.
I see.
Yeah.
So we wait for this to boil.
All right.
Which, unfortunately, we can't speed up due to the magic of television, but we wait for this to boil, then you put the oats in.
Great. And, well...
You want to pretend like it's boiling right now?
Well, it nearly is. Look, it's moving.
Okay.
Well, we could wait. Whatever.
Well, I kind of think, why don't we get started with the...
Here's one you prepared earlier.
Yes, through the magic of television. Through the magic of television, I prepared that earlier. Okay, so what we're going to do is we're just going to make some little patties here. And here's a little technique that...
Shall I do the squishing?
The mushing? Yeah.
There we go. And you're okay. Cheating. Now, this is supposed to go in the oven, folks, but bachelors don't use ovens. Except
when we're baking bread.
Bread.
Which I love to do, by the way.
And he's going to do that for us maybe next week.
Okay.
I'll twist his arm.
Hey, it doesn't take much arm twisting
really? Okay,
to get me to
great.
Bake some bread.
So instead of the oven, he's cheating with the hot griddle. Actually, I better spray it.
I don't know if you guys can hear that sizzle, but it's...
Oh, I better get to work here, huh?
Yeah, this is a team effort here.
It is.
All right. Oh. I'll mush. It's called the mush and slide.
Mush and slide. Well, we call that at our kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you have a different name for it.
Here's the mush.
And there's
the slide.
The slide. Okay, I see why you're calling it the mush and slide.
Yeah. Okay, mush.
Now, you're going to want to cook these fairly well, if you've got them. The beauty of this griddle, I love it because it cooks both sides at the same time.
That's right. It actually...
So it's twice as fast.
It's actually another mush. You just... They're now being mushed again.
They're mushed again.
Yeah.
Oh, look, this is boiling.
We're boiling. So we can put this in. And this is just going to boil for, what, like 5 minutes?
Yeah, that's what it says, boil it for 5 minutes.
Boil it for 5 minutes, and then mush and slide.
Mush and slide.
Mush and slide.
Well, we must be up to the best part of this segment.
The tasting. I believe it's time to taste.
Oh, I'll go you halves.
Okay.
You take your half.
Okay.
There.
Ding.
Ding.
Wonderful. Isn't that fantastic?
That's better than any sausage.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. That's why it's called an unsausage.
Put a couple of those in slap them between a couple of slices of bread. Put some of that soy mayonnaise we made last week.
Oh, yes.
That would be tasty.
Spread that.
That would be tasty.
Put some lettuce. Or your dandelion greens.
Yeah.
That would make a really great lunch filler. Well, that is a wonderful, tasty recipe. Thank you, Justin. And our experts are waiting to continue our conversation on early childhood learning. That's coming next. But first, take a look at this video from Dr. Jack Shonkoff from the Developing Child Center at Harvard University.
The healthy development of young children in the early years of life literally does provide a foundation for just about all of the challenging social problems that our society and other societies face. What we're learning, not just from behavioral and developmental research, but also now from exciting developments in neuroscience and molecular biology, is how much early experience from birth, in fact, even before birth, how much this experience literally gets into our bodies and shapes our learning capacities, our behaviors, and our physical and mental health. The brain is basically built from the bottom up. First, the brain builds basic circuits that are responsible for basic skills, and then more complex circuits are built on top of those basic circuits as we develop more complex skills. Biologically, the brain is prepared to be shaped by experience. It's expecting the experiences that a young child has to literally influence the formation of its circuitry. It's built into our biology. The interaction between genetics and experience that shapes brain architecture is embedded in the reciprocal relationships that children have with the adults in their lives. And by that we mean what we refer to as the serve and return nature of children's interaction with their own adults. Development and the impact of experience on development is not a one-way street. It's a back-and-forth interaction. The brain is a highly integrated organ which has multiple sections that specialize in different kind of processes. So we have parts of the brain that are involved more in cognitive function and other parts that are involved in processing of emotion and parts involved in seeing and hearing. So if a child is emotionally kind of well put together and socially competent, that will affect more positive and productive learning. And if a child is preoccupied with fears or anxiety or is dealing with considerable stress, no matter how intellectually gifted that child might be, his or her learning is going to be impaired by that kind of emotional interference. So when we talk about healthy development in the early years, and particularly when we talk about preparing children to succeed in school, we cannot separate cognitive development from social and emotional development. You can't have one without the other. All development builds on what comes before. So when children experience stable, nurturing relationships, it fosters the development of healthy circuitry. And when children experience uncertainty or instability or abusive or neglectful relationships, it literally disrupts the circuitry and the brain's architecture as it's being built. Over time, this has a wear and tear effect. And the more stress you have, the more causes of stress, and the longer your stress response, the more likely you are to have a whole range of problems later on. It can affect the immune system. It can affect the cardiovascular system. And this is why excessive prolonged stress early in life is associated with a higher prevalence later, not only of learning problems and behavior difficulties, but also physical and mental health problems. Because the brain is optimally flexible and plastic early in life, but as it develops its circuitry and refines its circuitry, it loses some of its flexibility, which is why intervening early is so important, because as we often say, when it comes to brain circuitry, it's better to get it right the first time than to try to fix it later.
That's so true. It's better to get it right the first time.
Yes,
isn't it?
Absolutely.
And I know, Davinia, you've been in those situations where you are trying to fix it because you've been involved in early intervention programs.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about that work.
Yes. Well, as an early interventionist, I worked with children and their families. And I worked with children who either were diagnosed as having a disability or who were at risk. And so what I did was I would go in and work with the families and help them help their child. And we did that in a natural environment, in that home environment or in their child care, and looked at how we could make learning fun and natural, but catching it early to provide those children with the foundation and the building blocks they needed for later success.
Give us some examples of how you made fun learning fun.
So let's say you had a child who had some physical delays or disabilities, and let's say we needed to work on things like grasp. So instead of, you know, sitting down and saying this is work time and having them, you know, pick up paper clips or blocks, we would do it at mealtime and use Cheerios
so that the child could work on that grasp.
Because they'd really want to pick those up and put them in their mouth, so
yes.
That would be the motivation. Great.
Yes, so they're learning and they don't even know it because we're having fun.
Fun, right.
Or at bath time, we can work on, pouring, naming the toys.
So just get a plastic cup from the kitchen. It doesn't need to cost anything, but they're going to be pouring.
Yes. Mm. Yes.
And working their little arms and their hands and getting those movements going.
Yes. Or with communication, doing things strategically to encourage that child to communicate. And so maybe I would put that child's favorite toy slightly out of reach, and the child would have to somehow communicate with me that they would like the toy. And so we may teach them simple sign language or teach them to point to the toy and help that parent recognize that what they're doing is promoting learning, but doing it in their daily routines and what
yes.
they're naturally doing.
I'm reminded of sometimes a family with, two or three children, and then little Charlie, he doesn't ever have to communicate very much because everyone just gets
yes.
everything for him.
Yes.
But making it that little bit harder and putting something out of reach, I like that. Just giving that child the challenge
yes.
to then use the skills that, we saw those lovely pictures of how plastic the brain is and that ideal time to start mm-hmm. building those synapses and creating a brain, really, isn't it?
Yeah, yes. absolutely.
Yes.
It's very exciting to see children learning, I'm sure.
It is, yes. It is.
Now, it's said that early childhood education is good for children. And Carol, what's good about it? What does the research show?
Well, the research shows that in early childhood education that has a broad spectrum, where we look at the child in terms of his health, his surroundings and all these things. The broader it is, the better it's going to be for the child.
So it's not just learning about the 3 R's, learning
right.
how to read and write and
arithmetic. Exactly.
When you say broad, give us some examples of what breadth should be incorporated in early childhood education.
Okay.
If parents are at home wondering.
Okay. They need to know something about themselves in terms of their culture. Who am I? Where am I coming from? How do I fit into the world or my environment? So the child needs to get a grasp of that, more than just, as you say, the 3 R's, because there's more to life than just 3 R's, I think parents are the beginning factors when it comes to education, and so they can set the standard as to how it's going to be done for children. Yes.
Tavinia, Dr. Shonkoff was talking about different skill sets. What are some of the skill sets that children need to learn when we're talking about the breadth of education, as Carol was saying?
Yes, I think that children need to learn to have self-control. They need to learn to effectively communicate. Mm-hmm. They need to learn critical thinking skills, asking those questions, why, and exploring.
Oh, they love the whys, don't they?
Yes,
yes.
And exploring and inquiring about the world around them, mm-hmm. learning those social skills. How do I get along with my peers? How do I get along within, my family structure? And then you have the physical development and those large muscles, gross motor skills, or those smaller muscle, fine motor mm-hmm. skills.
So the running and the playing.
Yes.
But then also the putting the little pieces together.
Yes, which leads to the writing skills.
Right.
And all of these early skills lay the foundation for what they'll need.
Right.
For those later skills.
I'm curious, how do you teach a little one self-control?
Well, it's, self-control. Simple things like, let's say we're reading a story, And if the child's, let's say, 2 or 3, and you know their attention span is about 3 minutes or so, and so, you know, letting them know, okay, we're going to read this book, and I need you to sit and attend and participate, and then at the end of that, then you can, whatever the reward is, play. So sometimes you may need to set a timer so that they know, oh, I need to sit and be focused for 2 minutes. And then when the timer goes off, I can, you know, do whatever it is that right. they're wanting to do. So helping them learn about structure and boundaries. Using schedules is great so that they begin to learn, you know, first I get up in the morning and I brush my teeth, and then I have my breakfast and take my bath, and using pictures when they're young so that they begin to recognize, oh, there's a routine and structure and
Great.
Order.
Thank you. Well, up next, Sean, our trainer, is ready to show us some exercise. But first, let's take a look at today's medical news report. Headlines today: teenage parents and their children, sweets every day, is your child breathing when they sleep, and childcare, is it really care? The ECLS birth cohort study looked at outcomes for children of teen parents. Those whose parents were cooperating were compared with those whose parents were in conflict. When exposed to co-parenting conflict, children had more behavioural problems. Boys were more susceptible than girls. So if you want your kids to behave well, teens, you'll have to behave well first. Does your child have dental fillings? In a study of dental caries, the Mannheim Institute of Public Health in Germany found that most preschoolers eat sweets 9 times a week. Higher sweet consumption was associated with immigrant background, lower parental education, and less nutritional knowledge. More sweets were eaten when there was easy availability and parental permission. So parents, more care, less caries. Did you know that preschoolers can have sleep apnea? A recent study looked at the association between the size of tonsils or adenoids and sleep apnea. Tonsillar size did not predict apnea, but the size of adenoids was a significant predictor of apnea in preschool children. The relationship seemed to reduce as children grew to become school age. Do childcare centres really care for children? An Oklahoma study reviewed all-day childcare centres to assess practices that limit obesity. The majority of centres served fruit every day, rarely or never served sugary drinks, encouraged staff to join the children at the table, and taught healthy eating. All in all, be great role models for your children. Someone once said, children are great imitators, so give them something great to imitate. I'm Dr. Nerida McKibben, and that's today's medical news report.
I'm excited about this week's topic on Hope Sabbath School: deliverance through Christ. Christ wants to not only deliver us from death, eternal death, but He wants to deliver us right now from the dominion of Satan. He wants to give you a freedom that will bless your life and the lives of those around you. We hope you'll join us.
Go healthy for good. Sean's here to show us some exercise. Sean, what have you got? Why am I holding this?
It's like a big rubber band. It's called a super band, okay?
Right.
Super band. Right, you got to put something in it though, right? It really make me duck. This is called a super band. It comes in about a half inch band, a inch band, and then a 1.5 inch band. So just to start off, this is an inch band. And I like to use it for different, you know, resistance.
You never start it easy, do you?
No.
No.
Never. What's the point, right? So what we could do is we're going to use a super band. You ever go away on business and you feel like, what can I do in the hotel room?
Yeah.
This is a great, you know, tool you can carry with you. It folds up very easy.
Hmm.
And you could just carry it in your bag and you don't got to worry about TSA bothering you.
Yeah.
If they do, you just tell me.
They'll be wondering what you're into. Today,
what are you doing?
Yeah.
All right. So what we're going to do is we're going to start with a little warm up. Almost like a deadlift, all right? Have you done a deadlift before? Deadlift?
No.
Okay. Working your hamstrings. So we're going to come all the way down here. And what we're going to do is hold onto the band nice and firm. And I want you to stand up. Push your hip forward and come back down. All right. Stretching out your hamstring. Coming back up. We're just warming up. Making sure as you come up, you blow out. Back down. This is very low impact. Again, squeezing your glute because we're going to be using the glute, targeting your gluteus medius today for the first exercise.
So this is just our warm-up.
Just a warm-up, okay? All right, when you get to the top, squeeze your glute, squeeze your quad, come up nice and firm.
Okay.
Right, relax. The first exercise we got is called an X-walk, all right? Literally taking the band, going about, standing here, putting the band about in the middle of your foot.
Okay.
And crossing the band over. All right. What we're going to do is work the gluteus medius, which is the upper part of the glutes. Okay. Great for stabilization. Good for your squat. All right. Great exercise to warm up prior to doing squats.
Right.
All right. What you're going to do is walk to the side here. All right. Targeting that glute. All right.
Mm-hmm.
But that leading leg is going to be controlled and you're going to make it come here. All right.
All right.
Don't let it snap. All right. The objective is to fire up your glute on one side.
Ooh,
and then
yeah.
Work the resistance on the opposite side.
You can
what
feel
can
it.
Happen is this. Okay, you don't want that. It's funny looking and it's just awkward.
Yeah, you all don't right? look cool you, when you
don't,
do that.
You don't,
no.
look, you don't. So pretend like I never did that, all right?
All right.
So let's go all the way down to the end
we
of the
We did have the record button pressed though.
We did?
Yeah.
Oh, this is live, right? So go to that side.
I'll go this way?
Yeah.
Okay.
See, you're going to distract me.
Yeah.
All the way. So a great way to make this a workout is when you get to the end there, let's say you pick the distance, right?
Mm-hmm.
From a bed to the window. You get down there and then you stand up firm, nice and tall, chest up, and then you do some high pulls.
Woo.
All right. Again, working your delts. Now you want to end up in that V position, working your deltoids. All right. The deltoid hat, there's three heads, the front, lateral, and the rear. All right. You come all the way up and squeeze when you get to the top. Don't rush through this. All right. Again, as you get to the top, it's blowing out. All right. All the way up. And you can hold here. Nice isometric hold. And then work your way going back. Let's go back. Again, don't let that leg snap in. Okay. All the way out. Again, work in the gluteus medius. Great for stabilization and just helping with balance and stabilizing.
You realize I have to sit on them in a few minutes.
But it'll feel good though.
Oh, really?
It'll feel good. Let's do five of those high pulls. Five of those high pulls. Three, two, one. Go. One. Two. Three. Four. Last one. And five. All right.
Hey, make sure. Can count today. You've been to early childhood education. I can tell.
There it is.
Learned how
I gotta be nice every now and then. We had a day off. All right. So what we're going to do is work the back. All right.
All right.
Let's put the band, you could turn to the side, I'll turn to the front.
Yep.
About shoulder width apart. Everybody likes a nice back, right? You like a
yeah,
nice back, right?
Nice back.
So about shoulder width apart, and what you're gonna do is squeeze back here. All right, and back. Again, don't let it snap. Keep that tension here. Bring all the way back. Squeeze the back. You could do this for about 10 to 15 reps, all right?
Mm.
What you will feel, continue going, so I can torture you a little bit.
Oh.
You're gonna feel your rear delt working a bit and the middle of your back, all right? Again, pulling as much as you can, squeezing that back, all right? Toning up the back of your arm. Oh, that was too tight. I set myself up. There it is, all right? Again, working the rear of your back, okay? relax. Okay?
Yeah.
There you go. Shake it out.
Excellent.
Okay, so you work your glutes, you work your delts, okay. And then you work your back. All right? What you can do is do that for about 10 to 15 reps each exercise. Go to one side, do an exercise, come back, do it again, and make a nice workout out of it. All right?
And do that 15 times, 10?
No. Reps-wise. So you can do it about three times, three sets.
Three sets,
right. But about 10 to 15 reps per exercise.
Per going across.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right?
Right.
So that's the super band. Again, you can get these for about, $8. There are different websites you can get them from. But again, it's called the super band.
The super band.
It's like a big rubber band.
Pretty super.
All right, let's stretch it out. All right. That's nice wide base. Chest up, eyes forward.
Okay. All right.
Arms out here and just twist. The objective here is to stretch out your abdominal area.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of keep the core nice and loose. You can keep your hands here if you want to as well. Keep your eyes forward and twist. And one time, come all the way down to the middle. Stretch that lower back. Stretch out that gluteus medius that we just worked. Fire it up. 3, 2, 1, come up nice and slow. There you go.
Nice.
How you feel?
Good.
Feel good?
Good. So you ready for a marathon?
I am. I am beyond
Yay!
Ready.
Really?
I am. I think so. I think I've worked hard enough for it. The training has been, we've been training for the last 12 weeks. Got up to real, our longest run was about 22 miles and...
Really?
I'm ready to rock and roll.
Whoa, good for you. Yeah. All the best.
Well, thank you very
much.
You're
going to be there.
Well, I'll be looking out for you and you'll see me in my bright shirt.
Really?
Yes, you will.
Oh, I better bring my sunglasses. Well, just a moment. I'm going to ask some questions that you've sent me during our previous shows, but first... Here's another Ageless Advantage spot. Enjoy.
Are you considering learning a new sport? It could be a huge advantage. Recent research found that men who improved their physical fitness reduced their chance of death by 44%. Middle-aged and older men who began a moderately vigorous sports activity like cycling, soccer, basketball, or hiking lived longer. They also have lower rates of death from heart disease. It is time to get off the bench. Taking up a new sport is another ageless advantage.
Remember, you can go to our website, hopetv.org/gohealthy. There you'll find all the shows and all the recipes that we do on the show, including those unsausages. Again, that's hopetv.org/gohealthy. And don't forget to call us live. Our phone lines are now open. The number's 855-400-HEALTHY. That's 855-400-4325. Or you can text us at 301-960-5144. We have a great offer for our callers. If you call us now during our live broadcast with a question about early childhood learning, we will send you this beautiful book for free. So call us now. Remember, that's just for our viewers of our live show here in America. And I want to say thank you for posting your comments and your questions on our Facebook page. Here are some of the questions that we haven't had a chance to answer on previous shows, or they've come in by Facebook. And a viewer called and asked, is peanut butter considered a fast food and is it a healthy food? Well, peanut butter is, it's quick to get it out of the jar, that's true. And it's not too bad, though peanuts have saturated fat rather than polyunsaturated fats, or more saturated. The other problem with peanuts, unfortunately, because they're a nut that grows in the ground, they're not really a nut. All the other nuts grow on trees and we call them tree nuts. But peanuts grow in the ground, so they're actually a legume. But because of that, they grow a mold, and that mold produces a carcinogen called aflatoxin. So I don't tend to eat peanut butter myself, but if that's an alternative for you, an affordable alternative to margarine or butter, then go for it. Kelly asks, can I juice the carrots with the long green stems? I'm presuming you're meaning the kind of the green carrot tops. Yes, you can. They may be a little bit bitter, but no problem. Adds to the chlorophyll, so go for it. Linda called, how can I incorporate a low sugar and a low carb diet? Linda, I would be concerned about you cutting out the carbohydrates. Low sugar, great, I'm all for it. Sugar has nothing good going for it. But carbohydrates, complex carbohydrates, are good for you. Those are like the cereals, the whole grains, legumes.
Most of their energy comes from carbohydrates, and they've been found to be really good. In fact, just last week, big study came out talking about legumes reducing the risk of, or improving control of diabetes, reducing the risk of diabetes for pre-diabetics. So, you know, those kind of foods we want to be including in our diet. And the last question, is it okay to juice fruits and vegetables together? And what about eating them together? Is that okay? And I know we've had that question before, but this question came in again. So fruits have seeds inside, vegetables, green and leafy. What about cucumber and zucchini squash or pumpkins? They have seeds inside. They are neutral fruits. And so you can eat them with fruit, no problem. You can eat them with vegetables, actually, but it's when you combine the sweet fruits and the green leafy vegetables, some people don't digest that so well, and they can run into problems. If you're not one of them, that's fine, but if you are, just keep them separated. So sweet fruit and neutral fruit are fine, or neutral fruit and vegetables are fine. Tubers, of course, are the potatoes and things. They don't even come into the equation. They'll go with anything. So, great question. Thank you for sending them. Keep sending them. And remember to call us now live and ask my guests a question. The number's 855-400-HEALTHY. That's 855-400-4325. Now, let me share with you a video that Dr. Davinia Lee prepared for us.
That education begins with early childhood, with minds, with the young children. And so this is an opportunity that we have to formulate a core curriculum from birth all the way through to tertiary education.
Within our programs, children are learning really the foundational skills that they need for future success in school. They are learning to be independent. They're by learning varying social skills, like how to interact with their friends, how to communicate their wants and their needs. They're learning self-help skills. And so they're exploring and learning to ask critical questions and learning to explore and learning to just have a love for learning. And most importantly, they are learning to love Jesus as well.
When they're young, it's the social emotional aspect. We're trying to look at the whole child. But that component is so important when they're young, learning how to work with one another, be as a team, how to resolve conflict. Just those things, they're going to utilize those skills and incorporate them throughout their entire lifetime. And if we can make them successful in those areas when they're young, they're going to go so far in their academics because they can work well as a team.
It's so true. We often forget the what seems such a simple investment in children will actually last a lifetime. Those behaviors, those patterns.
Yes.
I like that. I like that little video that you've prepared there. Tell us, Davinia, what would your ideal childcare facility look like?
So my ideal childcare facility, I think first and foremost, if it's a program that views itself as an extension of the family. So recognizing that the family is the child's first, foremost, and ongoing teacher. And so a program that looks to encourage parent involvement, that provides parental education, and that looks for ways to foster that parent-child relationship. One of the centers I visited, I think, did an excellent job of that. They had a, you know, parent lounge so that when parents were dropping off their child or picking up their child, they could stop by the lounge and talk with other parents or get resources. They did things like, you know, for a parent who absolutely has to work and perhaps can't take off in the middle of the day to come in, well, they allowed that parent to Skype their storytelling. And so on that parent's lunch break, she would, via Skype, read the story to the class. And so I think first and foremost, parent involvement, and then also an environment that promotes a play-based learning where the children are exploring and where it's inquiry-based and more like their natural environment.
Right. I like that. I can envisage that. Now we have a caller on the line, Rosa from Georgia. Rosa, welcome to Go Healthy for Good. What's your question for us tonight?
Thank you. I would like to know if it's harmful for to teach a baby how to read. I've seen that on internet, you know, where they are teaching babies to read at early, you know, very early age, like 5, 6 months, 7 months. Is that good or bad for the baby?
Oh.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Carol, is it good to teach a 5, 6, 7 month baby how to read?
That's a great question. My answer to that question, I believe that it would not hurt the child. Some children are very open to learning very early in life. So, and we know that the brain is developing. It's between the first year and second to the third year. So that's time to hit the iron while it's hot, I believe. Yes. So I don't think it will hurt.
No harm?
Yeah.
All right. What do you think, Davinia?
I think it's how it's done. So yes, you're teaching the child to read, but really teaching those pre-literacy skills. And so just exposing the children to books and allowing them to
explore
it, learn to turn pages, look at pictures, recognize that print goes from the left to the right. All of that is a part of learning how to read, but not that focus on the phonemic awareness or sight words that would come later. But yes, early
Something
on,
simple.
I think, with those pre-literacy skills.
Yes. Yes.
Like Dr. Shonkoff was saying, you know, the clip from Harvard where he's saying we build on what we've done before, and so I'm sure it's fine to teach a child to read, but what are they building on? Do they, and I like how you've brought out all the, that we don't think about, because we weren't aware of those things when we learned to read, but all those little things that that stack up to read a book. I like that.
And recognizing all children develop at a different pace, and so taking them where they are and moving them.
Great. Well, friends, remember we have an awesome offer for our callers, and this applies to viewers of our live show here in the United States. So don't miss this great gift, this beautiful book. The number's 855-400-HEALTHY, so grab your phone. Make sure to call us your question on early childhood learning, and we'll send you a free copy of the book, Celebrations. That's 855-400-4325. Go Healthy for Good. We'll be back after a short break, so stay there.
A movement toward daily scripture reading is underway. It's called Revived by His Word. The plan? To read one chapter of the Bible per day. The goal? To direct the attention of participants to the importance of knowing Jesus through His Word.
We're getting some great questions. And here's one. I have the option to stay home with my child and then until they are school age. At what age should I introduce preschool? Carol.
Oh. Again, it depends on the child, but I would think if the child is open to learning and ready to learn, they can start as early as three. Usually children are asking those questions and wanting to know the answers to things around three, or maybe sooner for some children.
Okay, yeah. Here's a question, Davinia. As a parent, what do I do if the grandparents spoil my kids too much?
Well, I think that, you know, I know with my parents, they said that's the best thing ever was to become a grandparent, and they wish they could have done that first. Right. But I think that that's good for children to have that balance of you know, mommy and daddy provide that structure and the discipline, mm-hmm. but the grandparents are allowed
to spoil.
Spoil a little. Mm-hmm. And so as long as you can balance it.
That's great. Well, thank you, Dr. Hammond. Thank you, Dr. Lee. It's been great having you on the show. Mm-hmm. Parents and child carers, your children are changing every day. They're exploring their world and often through your eyes. So what's the view you're giving them? Take every opportunity to teach emotional connectedness and love. Guide their social skills. Encourage their ability to communicate their needs and their feelings. Help them to focus on a task and learn self-control. Model spiritual growth. It won't come naturally when they're older. You need to participate. Answer all those why questions and foster their love of learning. If you use preschool or childcare, be sure it's a good fit for your child and your family and stay involved as much as you can. Your investment in their life now will pay off in the years to come. Thank you for joining us on Go Healthy for Good. On tomorrow's show, we're discussing a serious subject, multiple sclerosis. Don't miss it, and we'll see you then.